All right. Welcome back on the gravel with your hosts,
Raven Oliver and Raven. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Does not feel like a Monday. This comes out on Monday.
It is a Sunday, but this is coming out on a Monday.
That threw me off for a second.
Don't you worry. We got it right.
It is Sunday today. Race was last night. Absolutely great race. Very, very happy with how the viewing experience turned out for me. I don't know how about you, but
I don't know. I mean, I lost my voice 2 laps into the race, but you know, we'll talk about that in a moment.
So we'll start with the general paddock news like we always do. Main thing right now, Adrian Newey, kind of the talking point right now with where he might be going next year. And we all know with what's happening at Red Bull, the connections are not great within the organization. It's a huge problem just with like tensions and everything. So,
I mean, yeah, you guys hear it every week. You're not surprised, yeah, but
we don't need to go over anything that's happening. But Adrian Newey is in talking stages with Ferrari, with seems to be in the direction of leaving Red Bull. And I feel like Ferrari is one of those teams that if they get one of those just guys like Newey,
that's an absolute game changer. You know, Newey going to a team that's the second best car right now, you know, he definitely has the fundamentals and the abilities to push that team to fighting with Red Bull in that instance. You know, Adrian Newey going to like a Haas or something, that's not going to change Haas and make them the best car on the grid. But somebody like Ferrari, who is a power unit supplier and just as good of a team as they are, Adrian Newey could definitely fit into that team and do something. I think, and obviously that's where I want him to go.
Yeah.
But
I think also too, it's like they would be able to do a lot before the regulations change in 2 years.
Almost definitely.
So it would be like really competitive then. And then it would be really interesting to see.
Yeah. If Adrian Newey is going to leave Red Bull, I would much rather him do it pre-2026 regulations, so he has a hand in crafting the car for the 2026 regs.
Absolutely. Happy 1 year of watching races to me.
That's something I should have said, but happy 1 year to you, Raven.
Thank you.
Seriously.
Thank you.
It's been good to have you watching races with
very
me.
Very fun.
Aussie GP 2023 was Raven's first race with me. He
it
came over one night. I kind of forced him to watch F1 with me. And we thankfully got one of the most exciting races of the entire year. You might be able to counter that with Las Vegas 2023 or Zandvoort 2023. But the amount of just pure
chaos
that went on last year in Australia was phenomenal for a new fan. So that really hooked Raven on. And, you know, we started watching every single race that year together. And obviously here we are now making a podcast on it. So it obviously worked. You know, my good graces, they seem to go ways. So
Ferrari was also the first team this week to roll out a minor upgrade to the car. And I'm not understating when I say minor, that this thing was about the size of
like a
this
match
SD card, for example, is a great visual representation of
yeah,
how big this upgrade was. It was just a small wing, like right over the rear diffusers to kind of just give a little more downforce, I feel like. But
yeah, and it obviously did.
Seemed to
work. George Russell would say otherwise. But no, it seems like it did nothing. The Mercedes was awful this week, but we'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah, so it was earlier stated by Planet F1 that a contract clause was added to Max Verstappen's contract that allows him to leave if Helmut Marko leaves. And all this apparently was like done without the knowledge of any of the senior members at RBGMBH. I hate that that's what their parent company is named.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
So frustrating to say out loud, but
it's just a giant acronym.
This was released earlier in the week, and it's reported that the tensions at Red Bull have cooled off a bit, which, I mean, I think that's what the goal was if you're Red Bull, to make this die down just a wee bit, but I mean,
I feel like it kind of has.
It has, but especially with how the race affected this weekend, I think you could argue that the flame, literally, is kind of underneath Red Bull again with just how that happened and then how Paris finished too. So I think both of those things combined relights that fire there.
I was going to say, not a good weekend for Red Bull entirely.
People are calling for Alpine to sell the team to Andretti Cadillac after the failed bid, but no. I say let the French struggle.
I think this is where we differ. I think you don't agree. I am okay with it.
I understand being okay with it, but my main thing is like this team is already an established team with history, and I think having another competitor come in and just make it more competitive overall.
Yeah.
I think that is better than letting kind of what happened. Like, we don't know if Andretti's going to even stay.
That's at true. That point.
So, like, but if they get their own team, they're kind of forced to stay. And I think that's more of the position of the FIA and F1 specifically.
That's
like,
true.
That's what their decision kind of goes off of.
Well, I'm thinking it's like with Alpine. How do you go about hiring new staff? Do you, you know, like, how do you go about doing that? Or are you so far gone already, three races into the season, that you would even consider doing something like selling the team? Like, I don't think they're going to do it. Don't get me wrong. But if they were to sell to Andretti Cadillac, I wouldn't be opposed to it at all. I don't think. Like, I just think Andretti could do such good things for that team. Like, I want Andretti in the sport.
Yeah, I do too, and I think that's where we agree, but the failed bid obviously makes sense for right now. It's the middle of the regulations. Try again 2026. I think that's when your best odds are going to happen, especially when you have Audi rolling out and becoming a new engine supplier and power supply unit. So, like,
yeah,
I think with that, they also have the ability to be like, oh, we can do like a team thing here where we now use the Audi power supply units instead. Like,
that's true.
I just think there's more room for that. And like, you know how there's Red Bull and then there's V-Carb and then you could say Ferrari and Haas are like the same kind that's of fair. Thing with that. But maybe kind of get that kind of situation going.
With like an Audi Andretti partnership in the sense that
the sense of like you send one to one team and then Audi's like the main team.
Yeah.
I think that would also be a really good way to get some more young guys into the sport and overall just feed the sport competitively. So
yeah, that's definitely I would like to see that as I'd actually be okay with that if, you know, Andretti actually acclimates into F1 well and they do become a front runner. If they have a team like Andretti join the sport, become an engine purchaser from them, if Audi wants to, you know, become that Mercedes, that Ferrari, and have that prestigious driver academy where maybe they route drivers through Andretti to get them into the Audi car.
I think that's like, a great route for them.
I'd be fine with that.
I think it would also.
But then you have to think, what are Andretti's goals? Because obviously, somebody like Mario Andretti wants to be a constructors champion, have a drivers champion under his name. So,
but that's where I think they're different enough where you can have that fluidity between the two, and you know, maybe with one car, like say one driver is just like, I don't know, like mid-season swap with like equal contenders just because the cars are slightly different. Maybe one's higher drag, one's better in the corners. So it's like the thing with Alex. I mean, he's doing a lot better at Williams compared to his Red Bull stint.
I mean, it's his team now. At this point, it is his team after we saw this weekend.
Yeah, we'll get there. I think it's time to move on from the Alpine point, but it's a very interesting thing. I mean, it's a lot, but I'll let you take the next point if you want to.
Yeah, so Mercedes Director of Driver Development, Jerome D'Ambrosio, he used to drive in F1 for Toro Rosso in 2009, I believe. I know he drove in the 2009 season. I can't remember how long he stayed in F1 for. It might have been 2011, if I want to say correctly.
Like 40 races, I believe.
Yeah, it was record. Max three seasons. Absolute peak three seasons. He's leaving with Lewis this year to Ferrari, and that's, you know, just another issue Mercedes is having. They're losing so much personnel in that team right now.
They get Bono.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I'm wondering.
That's a big thing.
Does Bono then become George's race engineer, or does he become
Fernando Alonso? I hope Fernando. That would be an exciting duo.
Oh, that'd be crazy. But yeah, it's another person that Mercedes have to replace.
It's gonna be hard
for them. And it feels like Alpine. Mercedes feels like a mini Alpine situation kind of thing. So, at least from a personnel standpoint.
Should have been something we said last week, but news wasn't fast enough. However, 4 to 5 episodes ago, we talked about Steak having a lot of troubles with just the sponsorship of Steak in the team. And during the race this weekend, they had to go under the name Kick Sauber because of Australia's strict gambling laws and, you know, give it to them for having online gambling laws, because
I was going to say the full team name is Steak F1 Team Kick Sauber. And to have to strip off half of the team name for half of the races, that obviously leads to concern. Like we talked about
a sponsorship issue at the end of the day.
Exactly. And we talked about this with the Swiss government and how they see their own online gambling laws, where it's obviously this translates over to a lot of different countries. How much money is Steak really paying you to have that title sponsorship where you're willing to cut them out for half of the races?
Kick just do it. Yeah, that's a very good point, where I think, like, I don't know the legality of it, and hopefully one day we can talk to someone who is a sponsor, but at this point in time, we can only speculate where. I feel like as a sponsor, that doesn't make you happy. If
I don't.
The one thing you're paying for is, you know, viewability of the car. It's like kind of an issue with the Red Bull sponsors right now, where their car is just never on screen besides the first and last lap. So it's like, okay, do I get my money back for this? Or next year, do we get a pay cut? Or there's just so many aspects of it that really just change kind of how you go about it in a way. But do you make Kick the main and then you do like...
See, I feel like Kick is so much less... what's the word?
It's a streaming platform.
It's controversial. Yeah. It's so much less controversial.
There's no... I mean...
And you can still give Steak almost the exact same amount of actual land on the car. Like, you don't have to reduce how much sponsorship is on the car.
Switch the, I can't think of the word.
What, side pod sponsor? No, like, main just, sponsor?
Well, yeah, but, like, what's the livery? That's the word I'm thinking
of. You don't have to change the livery at all.
So, it's just one of those things where it's, like, it's all contract and business sided. So, we don't really know that, sadly, as fans.
We kind of just have to sit on and watch.
Yeah, but we're working on getting some guests. Hopefully they can let us inside, but probably not.
Yeah, we can inside with them.
I have a sub-point on Kick Sauber that Valtteri Bottas has pencil legs.
He did an insanely cool commercial with Uber car share.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great commercial. He was dressed in this color exactly, I think. But sorry for your audio only listeners, I'm wearing a light blue shirt, but he is just built with pencil legs, and it is the epitome of an F1 driver. And it's like, oh boy.
But it was honestly, like, that to me, that commercial was Super Bowl commercial-esque. Yeah,
and I love the timing of it, where the joke of this is Valtteri's home race. Going on for years since he's been at Mercedes, I believe. Mm-hmm. And
His girlfriend is Australian as well.
Like, so that checks out.
Australia is kind of like a second home for Valtteri. So I'm not surprised that a lot of people call this his home race.
Which I think is great. I think is absolutely great.
I think it's so nice. He feels so good around here too. Like, he's had success around here.
We are in Chicago, my guy.
Sorry. He's had a lot of success in Australia in the past. So, it's been a happy hunting ground for him. So, I'm not surprised.
It's crazy.
He loves it there.
FIA investigation news has led to some powerful claims with the FIA president, Ben Salem. Lewis Hamilton stated in an article somewhere that he has never had his confidence, which...
It's a big point if it's Lewis Hamilton.
I was going to say, if it's Lewis saying it, you know there's going to be a lot of other people that kind of have this viewpoint. I think universally on the grid, I would say probably majority.
Lewis actually has the backing and name to speak out more than a lot of other people do.
If a guy like Zhao did it, everyone's just going to start ripping him.
Yeah, exactly.
But like,
but the amount of people that respect Lewis and are like, Lewis is my role model. I stand whatever he says.
I hate you now, Ben. It's like, okay, no. It's rough. I think overall it's not great.
It's not a good look,
but it's not a great relationship between FIA and F1 if the drivers of one company don't have faith in the governing body. It's...
Mm-hmm.
It becomes this issue where I feel like a lot of American sports have, you know, like player contracts with like for like player rights and all that stuff.
Oh yes,
media contracts and all that. But like, it gives, in a way, the players more power or alternating power. Yeah. But you don't have that in F1, so you have a governing body.
Mm-hmm.
And do the drivers have a say in who's in the body even?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so because it's a different company.
Yeah.
So
drivers are just there to drive.
Yeah.
Drivers are just there to drive.
Where's the middle ground between the two, I believe? So
there is the Drivers Association.
Okay. I didn't know that, but that is good to know. So there's probably that is the middleman in my opinion, but...
But they don't get to call for the axing of Mohammed Ben Salim. Like they don't get to do that.
Yeah, but you can protest. I mean, American sports have had lockdowns. I know basketball's had like 3 in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball had one a few years ago before COVID, I believe. So it's,
I guess, is it like that important to them then?
Yes, I think, well, like, that we can talk about that with the Fernando penalty.
Yeah.
So, if last year, isn't he being investigated for last year on a penalty?
Yeah, Jeddah.
For the first 3 races with Fernando Alonso. Okay, is he now just, like, overstepping his grounds and being like, okay, if this is what the people want, we're going to just axe him so hard? But if you look at the timesheet, it dropped him 2 places on the grid.
Yeah.
So not detrimental.
We're definitely
overall,
gonna get into that Alonso penalty in a little bit because that really aggravated me. Just like a lot of stuff. I was angry this weekend.
This whole weekend was not a great look. I'll let you get into the next point because anger takes this great segue.
Yeah. So Susie Wolf took legal action against the FIA and claimed that they made it against her and her husband over the winter.
With
actually calling them out.
The driver insider information with FIA Academy and all that. It was a huge issue over the winter, my apologies. But if you watched or like saw any tweets about it, it was just wife of Formula One team principal
Toto Wolff, like,
is getting sued. And I saw a lot of people pointing out where it's like, okay, she has a name, first off.
It's Susie Wolf.
And if you say that name to people, they're going to know who she is just from being in the sport and being
one of the most
head
notable
of the
female
F1 Academy.
Yeah. It's like one of the most notable female heads in Formula One or just motor racing, European motor racing, period.
It's frustrating.
It's unbelievably disrespectful.
It's frustrating and rude and it's just not the move overall. But that leaves us going over to the actual race. And pre-race news, there wasn't too much. It was mainly just with signs if he was going to be racing or not.
Mm-hmm.
And he said a lot over the weekend that he knows the risk. He hasn't been training. He hasn't been doing anything. He's just been in bed recovering from the appendicitis surgery.
And we kind of thought this might give Bearman another chance.
It could have
to prove himself.
But obviously, Sines was feeling it. I think obviously rest is also never a bad thing.
Of course,
where you just kind of are like, let's take a break and just go into it. I know I can trust myself, and I think that's kind of what he did because obviously he won the race. We don't need to gatekeep that information.
It's a beautiful thing, guys. Max Verstappen did not win.
But going over to practice, Alex Albon absolutely slams his car on turn six. And he did that last year, too.
Exact same corner in the race, causing a red flag.
But this time he did it in practice, and that's where the controversy comes in. And we're going to be sticking on this point for a little while on a debate, but that's okay.
This is the point that aggravated me the most out of the entire week. Not even the race weekend. The entire week. This ruined my week, honestly. I woke up, I saw this, and I threw my phone at the wall. So, James Vowles now has a very difficult decision to make, given Alex has totaled his car to the point where the chassis cannot be repaired quick enough to participate in any of the rest of the race weekend. Not even FP3 qualifying next day on Saturday. He can't even race. It's that bad. So you now have two drivers and one chassis. Who do you think is going to race in the car? Oh, of course, it's going to be Logan Sargeant, the guy who didn't total his car.
Kind of checks out. That's kind of what happens when you shank it into the wall.
You live with your actions. James Vowles had a very difficult decision to make where he sat down. He said he sat down and he looked at the numbers and told Logan Sargeant that he had to sit out for the rest of the race weekend and give his chassis to Alex Albon to race. And that is what happened.
My guy was looking at Excel spreadsheets and was like, mm-hmm.
You're out.
Yeah. Like, happy birthday, Alex. It's your teammate's car.
I was going to say, because on Saturday, on qualifying day, was Alex Albon's birthday, the day that he was gifted Logan Sargeant's chassis.
So stupid.
But I personally think this is horrific.
It's a bad look for Williams, too. I mean,
because it's two different things. It's unprofessional from F1 as an organization, from an F1 organization. Sorry, I tripped over my words there. To not have a spare chassis, because I'm pretty sure almost every team in Australia had a spare chassis.
A counter with, it's a lot of things to bring over from New York.
That's true. And they're a smaller team.
They're going to try to cut budgets when they can. And I think that's just one of those places where it's like, it's so expensive to travel with this that we can probably cut it out and save a lot of money and try to do stuff with that money otherwhere. So I think the points you're making are all true. And yeah, it's not fair to Logan Sargeant because you just essentially said,
I was going
to
say,
we don't trust you.
Yeah, it puts a bad taste in both Albon and Sargeant's mouth because now, if you are Logan Sargeant, you're just waiting for Alex Albon to crash and take your chassis again.
I mean,
and then for Alex Albon, it's, wow, I have so much pressure on me because if I crash, I'm stealing my teammate's car and I'm still expected to perform again. Like Alex, you know, is now being expected to perform at the absolute highest level every single race to the point where they're willing to sacrifice the other driver for his own driving capabilities.
Because the numbers.
We're
not the Oakland A's.
James Vowles didn't even say that it was due to anything that happened last year. He said it was specifically off the numbers of the first two races of the season. Like, neither of them scored any points in the first two races. Like, it just blows my mind.
Yeah, that's a great point to point out, too, but I just remember looking at James Vowles does little like fireside chats on his Instagram.
Yeah.
And
oh yeah.
The one thing I just remember everyone saying, it's like, yeah, this is great. We get like an insider look to kind of what he's thinking and what he's actually doing. But at the same time, everyone just complains for him to get a better camera, which it's like, if you're Williams, just like give him an iPad and like let him cook. James Vowles needs an iPad. Let's be real. If he's crunching the numbers to see which one of his drivers is actually going to race, and he's like, "Oh, whoop-de-dooter, you're out."
What would you, like, you think? Do you think he's on the Ward family home 1995 Christmas video camera? Like,
I think he might be on the same, you know, handy cam Sony cam that we're on.
That's
but
fair. He has good lighting though. You can't get, ooh, you can't get him for
he
that.
He has one light above us. We have two.
But I don't want to tangent away from the bigger issue with James Vowles. But I mean, yeah. So stealing another driver's chassis to cover for the mistake of another driver, I think is like, like, to me, sure, performance is everything. You're trying to score every single point possible. But when neither of them have scored any points at all this season, I think it is completely unjust and unfair and untrusting of Logan Sargeant to steal his chassis from him. It's you as Logan Sargeant, you have to think, why am I even racing at all now? Like, to me, that would be so unbelievably demoralizing to be told straight up, your teammate is better than you.
Yeah,
and
that's
he will get your car, like in any strenuous situation whatsoever.
That's my biggest issue. Is like, why do you have him? Like, mm-hmm. if you don't trust him enough to like let him go out there and prove himself, I mean, it's okay. It's not your rookie year anymore. You're a little late to prove yourself, but now you're just fighting to keep your seat.
Yeah. How are you able to fight to keep
yeah, like
if that's stolen from you.
That's just not fair to him at all. And so taking that precedent, and you know, I don't think other teams do this. Aston Martin has never done that.
I mean, Max Verstappen said he'd pancake his car if
I have that point later where he's Max Verstappen is Logan's biggest supporter and proved it in the race where he's like, if he's not racing, I'm not racing. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, why race at all? Terrible look on the team. But at the end of the day, it's like, what do you do as Logan now? Like do you wholeheartedly put like your effort
into
this?
That's a whole nother week's worth of racing that he does not have under his belt. Like he essentially took a week
on a track that, like, in my opinion, is one of the harder ones because of how narrow it is. Canada is a hard track just because of how narrow the streets are
and
to
Zandvoort
the walls
as well. Yeah, Zandvoort's another huge one.
It's small things like that where it's like, okay, the track might not have, you know, 27 turns like Jeddah, but at the end of the day, Australia, I mean, I can say from two races that I've seen there, it mm-hmm. has done the most damage to any, like, to all the cars.
Yeah.
There was, what, 3 red flags last year.
And then we had Alex's massive crash this year and George's crash during the race this year. All the
it's
same
not,
corner.
All, yeah. It's like, it's a hard track. And it's proven itself to be a great watch.
Yeah, it's been a great watch.
But the issues that have also come from it, I think, kind of nuances in a way where it's like, your roommate was saying last night where it's like Mickey Mouse winner.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, you don't have the two greatest names in the race. Like, does Sainz get that credibility? Yes, he obviously should.
Well, it's important to know that my father's going to be mad when I say this, but every single time Carlos Sainz has won a Grand Prix, Max Verstappen has had an issue. There was a setup issue in Silverstone 2022 for both the Red Bulls. In Singapore 2023, the Red Bull just wasn't there. And now you have Max Verstappen's, thank the Lord, mechanical retirement. He's not there. So it is, he put it well. It's like Mickey Mouse winner. Like, do not discredit Carlos Sainz.
Do not put an asterisk.
This is not an asterisk win. Absolutely Esteban not. Ocon 2021 Hungary is an asterisk win. This is not an asterisk win.
Lewis Hamilton's 8th championship.
Asterisk. Felipe Massa's missing championship. Asterisk. But yeah, don't discredit Carlos Sainz. But Max Verstappen being out of the race, definitely. I could see where some people would say Mickey Mouse winner, Mickey Mouse championship. Like, yeah, it's that's definitely looming, I guess.
We're going to take a quick little break and de-stress and come back. So
we'll get right into qualifying.
Get right back into qualifying and all the action that I actually pursued this weekend. So we'll be right back, everyone. Okay, we're recording. Boom.
All right.
You can fade to black.
My mic seems like a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I have you very far down.
Okay.
Thank you for saying that.
Whenever you're ready.
And we are good.
All right.
Welcome back. Got a little food in me now.
Went over Leclerc 2022 France.
Watched the
Rocket Power Mohawk.
Yep, thank you. His little clip about the Team LH meltdown, which was
very, very, very entertaining. We're going to get into that in just a couple of minutes, actually.
So, starting with qualifying.
It wasn't a super exciting qualifying session, I want to say, but there was definitely one major shock that we saw when we watched live, which was Lewis Hamilton going out in Q2 on merit. It's not like he had any issues. Excuse me, or anything. Mercedes was just the sixth best car in quali trim. The setup wasn't right for them. The car upgrades weren't working like they thought. Given Tsunoda's insanely good qualifying on merit, given there was nothing crazy in the qualifying session, you had Red Bull, Ferrari, Aston Martin, McLaren, and RB ahead of Mercedes. Like, it was very difficult to watch. I mean, George Russell was the highest qualified Mercedes, and he only qualified P7. It was very tough to watch from their standpoint. It was also difficult to see Ferrari not really extract as much as we thought that they would. We definitely thought Ferrari, post-practice especially, would be in the fight for pole position. But Charles made a mistake on his last run. He probably would have been on the front row if not. Yeah, the Ferraris definitely should have been challenging for pole, and they weren't, so that was a bit disappointing to see, but it didn't really matter when it came to the race. And with that, it was Raven's first race repeat, and we were hoping for a bit of action, and it delivered. So I'll let you take it off the line, off the five red lights.
Right away, Max seems to have a problem with his car, and... You know, watching the first two laps,
we're seeing a bit of smoke develop.
We see signs overtake him, which we start screaming at the TV.
New leader for the.
It was the third leader of the year at that point, and he kind of maintained that lead for 90% of the race afterwards, which was great. And it seemed like it was a cooling issue from first glance, just because, like the commentator said, it wasn't coming from the center part of the car, so it wasn't really an engine issue.
I was going to say, it was coming from that left rear tire of Max Verstappen.
It was actually the right. It was the back right tire. And
oh, thank you. You're right.
He started saying, fire, fire, which he was correct. There was a fire.
I was going to say, we were seeing, like, so much smoke come out of the back of the car.
And as
on
he
the
was
screen.
Entrancing,
I mean,
the pit
we were
lane.
Screaming at this point. Yeah. Like, I love Max Verstappen. I'm not a Max Verstappen hater whatsoever. It's nice to see the It's nice to see the race open up. But yeah, you had a giant, I don't want to say giant, but you had an explosion on his car when he was
it
coming
into the
pit lane.
It was the tire exploding.
Yeah.
And it was big enough to be like, whoa, that wasn't good. And
they rip the tire off, and then you just see
you can see it like melting off, and like,
and then you look at the actual brake ducts and the brakes itself, and it was all melting away.
And so this was the end of his 43 race finishing streak, which very impressive.
Funny enough, the 44th race backwards was Australia 2022,
wow,
where he had a mechanical failure.
So he just doesn't have luck over
Max
there.
Cannot go back-to-back Australian GPs finishing.
Which, hey, that's just luck of the draw. But
it is.
Max said in his interview that the rear brake just like engaged and never disengaged. His exact words were the brake got stuck and then the temperature just skyrocketed and
yeah,
started making the car unstable and ended up catching fire and breaking the entire car.
I was gonna say, I saw a lot of people on the internet being like, okay, so since the brake engaged, why was he not driving 5 miles an hour? And it's like, it's so hot that the friction is being canceled out by the heat. So that's why Max was able to keep up with Sainz for so long before it became so bad that it ended up exploding. But it was really disappointing for Max, but it at that point, 3-4 laps in, it completely opens up the race given Sergio Perez's grid drop that he got during qualifying. I should have mentioned that. Sergio Perez got a grid drop in qualifying for impeding Nico Hülkenberg on his final lap in Q2. So Perez started P6. So that really opened up the race for the two Ferraris, the two McLarens, Perez as well, and then Russell and Alonso.
Even
Stroll as well. So, I was going to say Stroll started very highly in this race. He started higher than Alonso.
The battle of the back was insane this race. You know, P9 to P12, I feel like, kind of
was changing almost every lap.
And then it kind of settled in towards the end once the Haases kind of secured the 9 and 10 finish for them, which congrats to them. That's big. But there was no red flags. Which
was good. There wasn't even a safety car.
There was no real safety car, but there was the virtual safety car. And for eventually...
For what was that for?
Well, we had one for...
Our glorious...
Max Verstappen. And the other one was for Lewis Hamilton's engine failure, which I don't know if you've heard the audio in the clip of like the onboard.
No, I haven't seen it.
But it quite literally is going... And then he just starts rolling, and
it's not good. And it was in a horrible part of the track as well. Oh,
absolutely.
It was in the fast left right in the middle of the second sector.
9-10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he pulled over, and that's where the second one was at during lap 17. So rough weekend overall for Mercedes, and obviously
rough. Honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, once we get to the end of the race, you're going to realize it's a rough weekend for all world champions on the grid.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, with Max out and Lewis, I mean, Lewis was nowhere anyways because the Mercedes was so bad. But yeah, Sainz took the lead in that second lap. Obviously, Raven and I were screaming in excitement. But then you had, you know, what we hoped for, which was going to be the charge from Lando, the charge from Charles and Oscar as well.
Quick little Alonso lead during some pits too. So
yeah, everybody was there.
It was a great race overall. So we can't look at this and be like, oh, meh, asterisk, Mickey Mouse winner, you know?
No, because Carlos dominated.
Yeah, no, he absolutely dominated.
The second Max was out, Carlos took that and ran.
I believe it was like lap 12, I want to say, where they're like, okay, Sainz, plan A. Mm-hmm. And they never looked back from that, so...
I mean, at one point, Carlos had like a 9-second lead to Charles in P2. Like
what he said at the end, though, was sweet when he crossed the lap, where he's like, "Tell Carlos to come close to, so we can finish." Like
I was gonna
one
say,
and
yeah.
Two.
Carlos,
but then I immediately
down.
Looked at you and was like, "Cool, he can't catch up. It's virtual safety car. There's Delta
pace.
Oh
yeah, the virtual safety
like,
car. At the end
he
of the
can't
race.
Speed up, or he's gonna get a penalty." So I think that was all just a ploy to get Oscar and Lando on the podium instead, but
nah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just overall it was kind of weird in some aspects of like team strategy.
Yeah,
you had the McLarens during like mid-20s. I think it was right after Oscar pitted for the first time.
Yep,
where
they let Lando by.
Yeah,
since Lando was on a different strategy. You had Ferrari was kind of just like acceptance. Carlos is in the lead, he's winning the race. Charles, do your own thing.
But it's like, okay, I understand that. I believe there was like 5 seconds at that point, ended up at like 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a 9 at one point. But why switch them? And I understand like tire strategy and just Lando had the better tire strategy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But let them have it for a little bit longer. I feel like
I was gonna say just let them race
that too. Like just let them pass on merit.
But I guess feel it's like because they definitely there wasn't wanted to, they wanted that, to protect from Perez. That was
a huge thing too.
But then it was like once Perez overtook Russell, his pace disappeared. Like
they were like, it's gonna catch up to the McLarens, and then immediately it was like, Russell's staying with Perez the entire time.
And then for the rest of the race, Sergio was like nowhere. Just as far behind Oscar as he was 30 laps earlier. Like nothing happened.
So
it was very depressing if you're a Sergio Perez fan, and it wasn't good to see. Like that was Perez's race to win at that point.
It was what I was saying about Haas earlier in the back of the pack was them battling with Alex mainly. I think it was Nico passed him first, and then almost right away, Hulk was fighting to pass him.
And that's
him.
The thing. With not having two cars, you have like no alternate strategy.
You have no defensive or decoy or anything like that. So
Alex was a sitting duck.
Mm-hmm. And Haas took major advantage of it, then got rewarded with some luck after, the grid rearranged at the last lap. So
I was going to say, let's get into that, actually. I think the George Russell incident on the last lap is a huge talking point from this race, almost as much as Max Verstappen retiring. But yeah, you had George Russell chasing Fernando Alonso in the closing stages for P6 in the race. And on the last lap of the race, you had a bit of, I don't want to say questionable, but to the stewards, obviously,
it was
questionable
quoted,
defense.
Quoted, unusual maneuver.
From Fernando Alonso, which
is what caused the crash. And
Fernando Alonso was cited for braking about 100 meters before the typical braking point that he used for the entire race at turn 6. And apparently that caught George out and forced him to go into an evasive maneuver, or he just wasn't ready for it, and he spun off the track, hit the wall, and flew back onto it.
So he was, George, obviously out of the race. Alonso's given a 20-second penalty, which ends up going from P6 to P8.
So
just
he drops
behind Yuki.
Behind his teammate.
So
and Yuki.
Nothing huge as a penalty. But the main thing that really kind of sticks out for me is,
it's the fact that is George crashing Fernando's fault whatsoever?
Yeah, I think that is the base point of it. But like, I think the main point you want to make is like, where's the line between trying something new and like drivers just
being
doing
this
like,
intentionally to
that, but also like the driver's reactiveness towards it, like late end of the race. I can understand where it's like, oh, George's, they're 57 laps into this race. It's hot.
Yeah.
It's still summer there. It's going into fall, but where is that line where it's like, okay, I want to try something new on this and see how it works for me and if it gives me a better position.
I was going to say,
is that my fault then for the driver behind me?
Yeah.
Not braking or being aware that I might try something new. Like I can understand in a race situation, everything's going so fast.
Think about the first lap. 20 cars within 100 meters of each other. You have to react to what's going on with the other car. So why is it any different 57 laps into the race?
I mean, it's tiredness. Like at the end of the day, these guys are still athletes. They're losing a lot of water and it's a lot of G-forces throwing your body around and you don't have time. They're going around the track in a minute and 19 seconds. So you don't have much time. I understand that, but I don't personally think that Alonso should be given this penalty because
20-second time penalty. So funny enough, what it was he was given a drive-through penalty, but since it was after the race, it was converted to 20 seconds. But a drive-through penalty for that incident,
even
is incredible.
Then, it's like, so if I made a defensive maneuver into that corner, and he crashes, is that my fault then?
No.
So
You didn't touch.
And that's the other point, is there was no contact
between
the cars.
He wasn't even close to him. Like,
So that's my thing is like, I don't know why you are being punished for trying to do a different racing line. And it's hard, like being behind someone. Yeah. You're going to have to brake, you know, your tires might not be as good.
Yeah.
I might not have grip, which on that part of the track, I'm going to give it to you. That is a pretty hard braking zone. And then immediately having to release and gas
into a quick
into
corner
next
too.
Two corners. Yeah. So I understand that there's risk there, but at the same time, I don't understand why you aren't allowed to try something new. It's the last lap of the race. You're trying to, we saw this at Brazil at the end of last year with where Alonso and Perez were battling out for P3.
Yep.
They were not doing the diff. They were doing different lines every single, like those last eight laps, I want to say.
Yeah.
Each one of them was a different single line. So
forcing defensive moves, going on attacking
so
from the outside.
There's
from the
a battling aspect, but George Russell being like, yeah, that's his fault when you're not in a, like in an opportunity, there's no gap. First off, Ayrton Senna,
he's not overtaking into that corner.
No
whatsoever.
So why does it matter to like give him this huge penalty when it's not really his fault? At the end of the day,
it's not. And George Russell is getting a lot of flack on social media for it because he blamed Fernando.
I mean, props to them not blaming them during the race, but like it coming out and being like, yeah, that's Lando's fault. I think you should be
you
like,
mean
okay.
Alonso's fault.
Yes. Sorry. Alonso's fault. I think you have to kind of look at yourself and be like, I think I definitely played a part of that too, where I just didn't react right and did the wrong thing and crashed my car. And, you know, luckily, obviously he's safe and okay, but that was a scary crash, man.
Exactly.
So,
but
it's rough.
I think it's important to bring it back to the highlight of the weekend, which was,
I want to make the one quick point was he trying to kill his future teammate? So he could be the number one driver.
Dude, he'll be the number one driver there just by performance. Let's be real. But speaking of performance,
shout out to Lance Stroll too. He had a good race.
He did.
Good clean race. That's what you're paying him for.
I'm proud of him. But I wanted to,
hopefully
I wanna...
his dad is too. Heyo.
He's just driving there for fun, bro. But yeah, no, serious congrats to Carlos and his performance this weekend, because you have to think he had no training the past few weeks with his appendicitis surgery. So to get back in and win a race immediately is incredible.
Yeah. Counterpoint to that.
Yeah.
Perez finishing P5 with your teammate out obviously is a major dent in your reputation, I would say. Especially when you're kind of in the hot seat already for your seat in the next year, 2 years.
When Max was in the pits on lap 4, that race was on a platter for Sergio.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you can say strategy. You can say whatever you want. I
think it was his pace. His pace, period, was just not there.
Yeah. I mean, P5, okay. There was still 4 better cars, 2 better teams.
Yeah.
Take your losses, bro. But where does he go? Genuinely. Ow. Where does he just done? Retire, spend time with your family?
Yes.
Don't cheat on your wife again.
No Monaco yacht parties.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's made that statement. I believe they're having another or just had a kid, so he's at like 5 now. So
it's gonna take time
retire.
For them, man.
Yeah, retire. Spend some time with your kids. Train them to be a driver.
We're coming into the end of it now, and that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, appendicitis. I saw a whole edit, which I wasn't going to say this, but it's funny. But you know how he is like, he has his pancake recipe. Carlos Sainz's recipe is out.
I got to try that thing.
And so it's like there's clips of him like eating the raw batter.
Mm-hmm.
And then people were like, salmonella, and then salmonella actually affects the appendix. And
okay.
So like people were like, okay, maybe his pancakes led
to Carlos Sainz's pancake recipe led to him winning the 2024 Australian GP. the butterfly effect.
I love every butterfly effect meme out there. They're so great.
Yeah.
Because you can't prove them wrong.
I think it was a great race, seriously.
Yeah, overall, great race.
Happy for Ferrari as well.
We got a lot more information to go over. If you thought this podcast was over, nah, you got another like 15 minutes, brother.
Yes, sir.
We're going to go over to a reoccurring segment here.
It's an important segment.
Top five or not five?
Top five or not five?
Legendary segment here. And there's not much to go over, but there is enough to go over, which is all that matters. So
there's a top five and there's a not five. There that's is. All that matters.
Starting with the top five, although I appreciate the dominance of Max Verstappen, I think we can all agree that this race was better without him there.
I think it was.
And you can say that because it wasn't his fault. It was God's fault. And if
a
you want to argue
Verstappen-less
that...
A Max Verstappen championship?
Wah, wah.
It's a competitive championship.
Facts. Very clean race, too. Also, first opening start that I have seen where no contact was made.
Yeah. Not even a tap.
Not even nothing. It was beautiful.
It was very nice.
It was very beautiful and clean. That's what we wanted to see. I think there was a pep talk going into the race where they were like, don't frickin' do last year again, buddy.
Another important point. Haas scoring even cleaner points than they did last week.
Absolute money steal.
You know, if you thought that crazy Kevin Magnussen defense in Saudi Arabia was worthy of a point, how about just two cars
racing
in the points on merit?
Absolutely,
like you can't be mad at them.
It's great.
They're awesome. Convincingly better than a few of these cars below them on the grid.
Last top five point is going to go to me just for being able to watch races now and be like, I have context.
He's got
everything.
And that's what matters. Guys, he has context clues from last year.
That's all that matters. So excited for that. We'll go over to the not five real quick, which kick Sauber. Got to change your tires faster, man.
Dude, they have wheel nut issues over there. I don't know what their issue is with turning wheel
nuts.
Get
a new
CNC
machine. Get a new drill bit. Work it out, man. I don't know what you need to do.
It's always Valtteri Bottas, man. If he goes into the pits, he's screwed into a long pit
stop. Every time. And then they screwed over Zhao, too, just because they're like, oh, you didn't do anything wrong. We'll do something wrong.
Equal rights, equal fights, man. Point number two is just Alpine. I mean, I think that one's pretty self.
There was a 5-second penalty for Pierre Gasly.
Pierre Gasly, I will say this is a top five point, actually. We probably should have put this in there and made a top six for this week. Pierre Gasly is no longer 21st in a 20 driver championship. That is now Logan Sargeant. But he didn't race this week.
So, caveat, he's still 20th, I think, in my opinion.
Oh, so you just forgot Oliver Bearman existed. All right.
Oliver Bearman gets the asterisks.
Yeah, he gets an asterisk.
Williams, you get the third point for the reasons foretold. That is what I was trying to say. The next one is just for Crofty. I'm pretty sure he has seen those Instagram
memes.
It's just the Instagram pages where they're just all racing commentaries.
Whenever they just say very suspicious
sexual
dialogue.
Yeah, very sexual oriented dialogue. But Crofty was saying that Stroll was edging three times. Which he knows how to reach those younger viewers and
okay.
To get those laughs. But I was reading online and it was like everyone knew. They were like, I heard this. And I knew this was going to be on this page
in
about 30
minutes. Yeah,
we're
going to rock up to Suzuka 2 weeks from now, and Crofty is going to be goon maxing when he's doing this.
It's so funny. He has to know. I am 100% in the disbelief that he does not, like, he cannot just be like, this is funny. I'm just going to say edging three times.
Hey, David Crow, he's just trying to fit in, man. And last point that's pretty important, you got Osama bin Russell, you know, trying to steal Ferrari's thunder again. There's a funny trend that in Carlos Sainz victories, George Russell likes to just throw it into the wall on the last lap.
I will say, though, Singapore wasn't his fault because Lando pushed the wall like a centimeter into the wind.
I mean, the wall just turned
into me. It's not his fault, so It's all good. It's all good. But this time, this time it was Alonso's fault.
The dirty air just turned into him.
Turbulence.
Oh, yeah.
We'll take your point over.
That was top five or not five. Now I'm going to give you my F2 race recap for this week. It's going to be one of the last ones for a little bit, as Formula 2 will not be racing in Japan. But it was a very exciting qualifying session in Formula 2 this week, with pole being traded a couple times in the closing stages. Kimi Antonelli was holding on to it for a while, which a lot of people were happy to see. And then Dennis Hauger came in at the very end and nipped it off of him. Him having been booted from the Red Bull Driver Academy in this offseason. It was very nice to see that he's bouncing back well. So with this, Roman Stanek qualified P10. So he started on pole for the sprint race, given they do the reverse grid top 10s. So Stanek started on pole. There was a very interesting and crazy crash. Raven and I both watched this together, actually, with Isaac Hadjar having started P4, I believe. Oh, sorry. He started P3. He had cut across Pepe Marti and Gabriel Bortoleto, who both also had really good starts, but he cut across them with how good of a start he had and threw the both of them into the pit wall, which was it was just a very big, unusual crash. I mean, it was a crash 5 seconds into the race. Like, they were nowhere near the first corner yet. It was just on the straight. Very weird to see. Kind of scary as well if you're, you know, somebody in the pit lane. But it was a very close race, with P2 being contested by 5 drivers at one point, which was really crazy. It ended with Kimi Antonelli and Richard Vachon both spinning on their own. And then you had Paul Aron running into Vachon after that. So the kids are obviously, they're still learning how to race wheel to wheel. And hey, that's important.
The kids are still learning. It's okay. Give them a few years.
It's okay. Hadjar eventually did go on to win this race on track, but he was later after the race, about an hour or two after, given a 10-second time penalty for that first lap, not even first corner, but drag crash that he created off the line. So this promoted Stanek, who started on sprint race pole, to the win, and it's his first win in F2, so congrats to Roman Stanek. It's his second season, so he's getting up to grips now. And then the feature race obviously started with Dennis Hauger on pole, but it started clean with Hauger, Antonelli, and Kushmini trading the lead over the first few laps for a while, and Hauger then, after the first round of pit stops, came out of the pits on very cold tires and just smacked into the wall at turn 6, just like Alex Albon and George Russell. It is a very difficult set corner. Of corners.
It's a hard one.
Corner and just set of corners to get right.
I definitely sent it into the wall there.
Because the problem is, if you send it off that corner at all, you're into a gravel trap and you're essentially being...
But then the hardest part about that is... The fact, like,
well, you can't correct the car anymore. You're in the gravel. You're just sliding into the wall.
But it leads straight into a straightaway,
mm-hmm.
where if you don't get speed from that corner, any car behind you is getting by you,
okay, and it repels you back onto the track, mm-hmm. into those fast cars, like with
it's
George. Such,
yeah, it's a risky corner. But
that happened. They put the safety car out for Dennis Hauger's crash. It's sad that he crashed from pole position, but that happens. You had Isaac Hadjar, who had been disqualified in the last race. He pitted under the safety car, saving him an insane amount of time that ended up leading to him winning the race, given it was such a close-fought race that that safety car timing benefited him perfectly. He won the race from Paul Aron and Zane Maloney. And now you have Maloney leading the championship by 15 points on 62 from Paul Aron on 47. So it was a very, very exciting race weekend for F2. So I was super happy to see that.
We got no rally this week, but we got Kenya next week. So something
I'm
to talk
super
about.
Excited
I'm
to watch that live. I'm going to watch that live.
So very exciting for that. WEC still got another month.
Yeah.
Sad, but... We'll see the cars go fast soon, brother.
Nothing in the IndyCar world either.
Nothing in IndyCar. And then we get to MotoGP, which I know you did not know was happening, but I did.
Raven spent the night last night at my apartment, and I I was sleeping. Raven got up super early.
I woke up at 6 o'clock just because the couch is not that comfortable. And
on YouTube TV, we had beautiful access to the MotoGP race.
Oh, no. It was not YouTube TV. I'm going to give the credit to HBO Max because.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, they won the licensing rights to that.
I didn't know that either. But apparently, they also have like WEC and stuff too.
Oh, wow.
They might have Rally as well. So shout out HBO Max for just
But I'll definitely let you take the MotoGP section today.
I got to watch, you know, everything from about lap 4 onward. So most of it, I didn't get to see the lights go out, which is always a bummer, but that's okay. Great race. First 5 were up until fighting, up until the last like few laps. Jorge Martin wins the race after leading for almost all of it. The main piece in the news was that the 8-time world champion Marquez and the last MotoGP winner at Qatar, Francesco Bagnaia.
I think it is Bagnaia.
I don't know. I think there's a G in there somewhere left out. But they collide on turn 5 on the 23rd lap. And, you know, if you watch it, it's not really one of the other's fault. You know, one of them's trying to overtake on the outside.
Just classic racing incident.
Takes a tighter inside line. Mm-hmm. The guy on the inside kind of falls wide on his line. They bump. They both slide out. Kind of unfortunate, but Bagnaia retired after that, and they were fighting for 3rd and 4th. But Mark did not retire, and this is one of the cool things about MotoGP.
Yeah.
Is that they crash and like slide out. Stewards are like running over the barriers, coming out on the race. They get these guys up on their bikes and start pushing them, and they start racing again. So that's something that's really cool. And I think the technology there,
yeah,
which is really like, cool. They have so many layers in their suits and like actual padding and all this.
I was
going
to say, because you have to think when they crash, their bodies are the things that are sliding across.
Oh, yeah. But also, like, they are part of the aero. So you have to remember, like, weight distribution. So, like, you can't wear too much padding if it's going to move and all that stuff. There's a lot of nuances to it, just like F1. And
of course,
that's why it's the second most watched racing discretion in the world. But he ended up in 16th, but still just out of the points. What can I say? Good race. It was an exciting one, but I wish I got to watch the beginning.
I want to see my first MotoGP lights go out for a standing
start. The fact that they do
bikes from a standing start is so cool.
Oh, it's thrilling, dude. Because it was last week I watched it.
Yeah.
One of the guys, his throttle got stuck on the line. No. So it just starts rolling and like wiggling out of his grid spot. And there's nothing you can do. But then they're like, he's trying to like get it back to the spot. The stewards are like, no, now you got to go through the pits.
Of course you do.
And it was a huge ordeal last week. And it was so crazy. But is there anything else? Any major news that we're missing?
No.
There's the people that I need to reach out to and hopefully snag an interview. But it's hard out here in the F1 world where there's not many F1 American journalists, but I'm gonna reach
out
to you.
They're slowly gonna get there.
I'm going to reach out to a lot of people, and I'm praying that they respond.
Raven will be in your DMs, guys.
I will be in your DMs under the Elite
number
deal.
One fan.
So that's all. I think that's all from me. That's all from you.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys sticking with us this week.
Absolutely. A little bit of a late episode. Sorry, we're a little tired.
It's okay.
You can hear it in our voices.
It happens.
We had to stay up till
currently 11:15 p.m. on Sunday night.
We stayed up till 2 last night.
2 last night watching the race. Yeah.
And I stayed up till like 1-2 on Friday. So
yeah.
I will definitely be getting some sleep. Definitely
be getting some sleep as well.
But I will play the outro music and catch y'all next week. No race next week. So gotta remind that, but we'll still have some news.
Absolutely.
Later.
Catch you guys.